on this edition of The Self-Publishing Show.
It is a very fast-changing and dizzying, in some senses, area of the creative arts. You know, it took me a while to come towards it. You know, I'm not an early adopter. And this
Joe Penn finds it hilarious that you've been cynical about AI for years and then suddenly, along with everybody else.
The thing is, I'm usually right.
Publishing is changing. No more gatekeepers. No more barriers. No one standing between you and your readers. Do you want to make a living from your writing? Join indie bestseller Mark Dawson and first-time author James Blatch as they shine a light on the secrets of self-publishing success. This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Hello and welcome to The Self-Publishing Show with me, James Blatch.
And me, Mark Dawson. Just turning in my headphones now because you shouted in my ear then. It was very loud.
I'm quiet in my ear. You've got to protect your hearing as you get older. Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm sweating. It's very hot. For those who don't know or who are listening in the future, summer has arrived. Summer arrived in June, buggered off for 2 months, and now has come back with a vengeance. It is really hot today in Salisbury and, well, everywhere in the UK, really. So probably, I'm going to say my office is 32 degrees at the moment, and I've had to switch my fan off because it's too noisy. So... These are the sacrifices I make for my listeners.
You have to suffer for show business.
With pleasure.
Well, listen, this is going out on September the 16th, I think. So that is a week tomorrow from where we're recording it. So everything could be different, could be cold. But you and I are heading to sunny climes because the day after this goes out, I hopefully will be on a jet to Miami. And then we're going up to Boston to meet BookBub, have a couple of meetings up there. Then we're coming back to Tampa for Nink. However, there is, of course, a hurricane. His name is Lee. I think it's a male Lee. It's currently heading towards just south of Bermuda. And the tracks, there's one guy called Spaghetti Weather, I think he's called himself.
Yes, I remember him from last year.
Yeah. So he does them. And one of the tracks has it going into Florida, and one of the tracks has it going up to Nova Scotia. And then there's a lot in between. So it's almost anywhere it could go. It could go to anywhere we're going, Miami, Boston, anywhere in between.
How exciting. I did see...
Or it might be what they call a fish hurricane, where it goes out to sea. Which I'm at the
stop hoping. Interrupting me, please.
I was talking.
I remember I saw today, because the ocean is... It's been the broken records for the temperature of the water this year. And I think there was... This is probably kind of just not true, but they were predicting potential 170-mile-an-hour winds, which would be the worst ever. So it's perfect time, perfect for us to be going.
There is also a monster hurricane. I think the biggest one this season in the Pacific, yeah.
Yeah,
Could go to California. So anyway, hopefully we'll avoid that. Our travel will be uninterrupted because we got caught up in a hurricane last year. But yeah, we're looking forward to catching up with BookBub. It'll be my first time visiting their offices in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And then we're looking forward to Nink, and you get a chance to come and say hello, and we'll buy you a drink, and you can press the flesh, as I believe the expression is. If you want to join us, we will be in St. Pete's Beach in Florida near Tampa on Wednesday the 20th of September from about 7 p.m. in a place called Jimmy B's Beach Bar. Jimmy B's, basically it's a beach bar named after me, and it's a very short...
Probably Jimmy Buffett would be my guess.
Maybe the owner. It's a short walk along the beach from the venue, from the Tradewinds Hotel. We can't go into the Sharktooth Tavern because it is closed, but we'll be at Jimmy B's Beach Bar, which is a nice beach bar. We've been there a few times in the past, and it's a cool place. There'll be a bit of live music. Come and say hello, and we'll have a chat.
Not from us.
No, thank goodness. We also have a webinar coming up on the 27th of September. We are going to have a special treat because a man who wrote the book on Amazon advertising, Ricardo Fiat, is going to present his breakdown on the effective use of the Amazon ads platform, very important platform for those of us self-publishing. That is a free live event, free live training, and you can sign up and register for that if you go to selfpublishingformula.com/Amazon webinar, all one word. selfpublishingformula.com/Amazon webinar. That'll be Ricardo and you for certain, maybe me. I think I'm still in Florida at that point. I'm being blown away. I might join from there, but otherwise it'll be the main treat will be Ricardo. And on top of all of that, the Ads for Authors course is open for business. Ads for Authors, which is a significant milestone course. I mean, I kind of treat myself as an alumni of the Ads for Authors course because I've been successful with my books and with Fuse books. I've learned the methodology that you painfully discovered by yourself. And then we have kept that course incredibly up to date. It is the most comprehensive, wide-ranging, detailed, dynamic, and I think the best online course for self-publishing authors on the planet. A lot of people will agree with that who've taken it. We would say that, I know, but there's lots and lots of alumni, of students, pages and pages of people saying how valuable they found the course. It is open for enrollment, same price as last time. And you can find out more if you go to selfpublishingformula.com/ads for authors. And we have a new edition, a new module. We're always adding things to it. And what are we adding to it this time, Mark?
We're adding something on AI, so we couldn't really ignore it anymore. It's AI marketing for authors. So we're focusing not AI. On...
Was it AI ads for authors? I can't remember.
That's right. Yeah, AI ads for authors. Yeah, so it's focusing on using AI to help us with our marketing. So, you know, it's an interesting, very, very interesting area that is moving quite fast. And there's things we have to talk about that happened the last couple of days. But just before we kind of dive into that, so things Amazon's position and that kind of thing, it is going to show you how we are using AI to assist with advertising. So things like images. So if you're testing dynamic creative ads and you want lots of different variations, it's convenient to be able to generate those yourself. And the quality is really fantastic. Some of those images that, I mean, you've done very well with that. And I'm toying around with it as well. And also things like ChatGPT for ad copy. So variations on headlines, tags, primary text for Facebook ads, all of that kind of stuff. It's really good at it's not going to give you polished copy that you can use without any kind of intervention, but it will give you some really helpful starting points. So we'll talk about that in a moment. And then also not really AI, it's more kind of machine learning, but it is kind of, it's all coming out of the same field. It's whether and how much we can trust Facebook to do the advertising for us. So how much can we afford to let Facebook just go on and run campaigns without our involvement? So there's, again, we'll talk about this as we go through the episode. There is a bit of a movement at the moment, and I do have some thoughts on it and some cautionary words to say about it. But there is kind of a thought process developing that we can kind of let Facebook do all of it for us. And Facebook is definitely moving in that direction with things like Advantage Creative and Advantage Budgeting and all of that kind of stuff. So Advantage is basically the label they've given the facility to let it do most of it for you. Generally, I would say it's a good way for Facebook to try and make you spend more money, but we'll get onto all of that. But we couldn't really ignore it. So I have been doing some testing on very, very hands-off marketing using Facebook, and we can talk about that. And there will be a module on that in the course, which, you know, we will update. So one thing, as you say, we do try to do is keep things up to date. And this is not a super extensive course. The AI ads course, the main course is huge, but this is a smaller little module. But I think our intention is to add to it as we discover new things, as the platform gets better, as other uses for AI in marketing become more widespread, we'll add things on as we test them and find success. Because one thing we don't do is use things that we don't think work, because what would be the point? I'm not going to teach you something that doesn't work. So we'll keep that up to date. But there we are. Yeah. That's kind of the run through the précis. So should we jump into the kind of general?
Yeah. I definitely want to circle back to the Facebook ads thing. So we mustn't forget to come back to that after we've talked more AI. So there's no interview today. We are just going to be discussing AI. It's such an important and significant and fast changing area that is going to change many aspects of the way self-publishing operates in the same way that it's changing aspects of many other industries. I don't know. Do we want to do a little ethics thing first before we do anything else? I mean, you can talk about this. Some people are just vehemently opposed to it in our community, and maybe some readers are as well. Any sort of touch of AI at any stage in the process is met with, I think, probably a dwindling minority, but nonetheless a significant one, who just are anti the idea of AI. And I think we're past that point, aren't we?
I don't know if it's a minority or not. I think it is a real... It's hard to say. I don't know, never really looked at it, but there are groups now, quite big groups on Facebook, of authors discussing AI in a positive way. But it's, you know, we posted last night some stuff into the Facebook, SPF Facebook group that, from Amazon on their developing policy on AI. And, you know, I told, who did I tell? I think we posted it. No, actually, we sent out an email yesterday, or yes, it was yesterday, about the webinar that we're doing on AI, which will have happened as this goes out. So kind of, you can't attend that particular webinar. But I just said to Tom as we sent the email out, we're going to, you know, there will be some customer service issues to deal with, because we will get people saying, what are you doing? And lo and behold, there were emails, a couple of emails coming in decrying the fact that we're talking about it, which is, you know, you have to be, I don't agree with that, but it's, you know, it's an opinion, I suppose, and you have to be polite to people, but it's ignoring it and pretending that it can be reversed is foolish.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And at some level, AI is going to be involved in lots of everyday things that you're doing. You won't be able to avoid it at that point. So I suppose, Dan Wood, I interviewed him last week, and he pointed out that when you upload your manuscript, for about a decade now, KDP has used a level of AI to look at your manuscript and work out whether it needs a human intervention for them to stop it being published and then come back to you for various reasons. And they wouldn't be able to do self-publishing without that, because to have a bank of humans looking at every manuscript that came in is just not feasible. So it's that little bit of AI, machine learning, has.
I think you need. It's true. I think it's more. There is a distinction to be drawn between kind of very simple. I say simple with air quotes. Simple machine learning and generative AI. They are different things. What we're talking about here, and that's not controversial. But I think what is controversial is using generative AI to produce something, an asset that is new, like an image or text, a paragraph of text that didn't exist before. That's my distinction. That's also, interestingly, that is what Amazon's position is. It's,
yes,
it's assisting or creating is basically the distinction. So we should probably mention that. So I got an email from Amazon from the KDP team last night asking if we post into our community, just so that they, you know, just to let people know that there has been a change to their guidelines on submission through the platform. And I had actually seen that someone had kind of stumbled upon it by when uploading something like half an hour before. I think it was Amanda Lee had posted about it. And then the other groups, the AI authors groups they were already discussing it. So it was kind of, the news broke quite quickly. It was in 20 books quite quickly. So I think Craig had an email from Amazon too. So so we posted it, and, you know, I had a look at the two links, or the pieces of text. I think it's probably worth just going through those. If you kind of read the announcement and then the guidelines, it's not very long, but it's quite useful to have that read out, I think.
Yeah. So first of all, the announcement is from KDP. This is their words, its words. We are actively monitoring the rapid evolution of generative AI and the impact it's having on reading, writing, and publishing, and we remain committed to providing the best possible shopping, reading, and publishing experience for our authors and customers. To that end, beginning today, when you publish a new title or make edits and republish an existing title through KDP, you will be asked whether your content is AI-generated. Learn more about how we define AI-generated content here, and that's what Mark's going to talk about in a moment, because that's obviously crucial to this. As always, whether publishers make use of AI technologies or not, all books in our store must adhere to our KDP content guidelines. And you, therefore, that's basically saying that you have to truthfully answer the questions whether content is AI generated. We continue to keep the interests of authors, publishers, and readers at the forefront of our thinking and decision making. Now, before you go on to the definition of what AI is in KDP's minds, we should just say that Darren's email to us last night did ask for feedback. And so if you have a strong opinion on this, or opinion on the stance that KDP has taken, you can certainly feed that back via our Facebook group, and we will filter those down and make sure that Darren, who's the head of KDP in the UK, gets to hear your views. But Mark, that's the top line. You basically got to declare whether your content is AI generated, but what actually is AI generation?
So if you then go over to the kind of the help page, and it says headline AI content, text, images, or translation. So but first of all, it's going to say a question. The main question I saw was people suggesting it didn't cover book covers. Now, that would make no sense to me logically. It has to go. You know, it's you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So I don't really understand why people were thinking that. But apparently, John Doppler at Ally had some communication with someone at Amazon. It could be a customer service person, I don't know, saying that covers weren't included, which I think is wrong. That may have been. I've asked for clarification on that, and that's probably been dealt with by the time this goes out. But so I would say assume that it does cover covers, because it would make little sense if it didn't. So Amazon say we require you to inform us of AI generated content, text, images, or translations when you publish a new book or make edits and republish an existing book through KDP. You're not required to disclose AI-assisted content. So just kind of stop there. It's the distinction, therefore, is generation and assistance. So that's our first point. And then AI generation is defined as text, images, or translations created by an AI-based tool. If you use an AI-based tool to create the actual content, whether text, images, or translations, it is considered AI-generated, even if you applied substantial edits afterwards. And then AI assisted, if you created the content yourself and used AI-based tools to edit, refine, error check, or otherwise improve that content, whether text or images, then it is considered AI assisted and not generated. Similarly, if you use an AI-based tool to brainstorm and generate ideas, but ultimately created the text or images yourself, this is also considered assisted and not generated. It's not necessary to inform us of the use of such tools or processes. So then they finish with, you are responsible for verifying that all AI generated and or AI assisted content adheres to all content guidelines. So that's just generally. For example, to confirm an AI based tool did not create content based on copyrighted works, you're required to review and edit any AI tool outputs. So that's interesting, because I mean, copyright law is changing all the time and will change based on this. But that's a different question for another podcast, but the distinctions between generation and assistance, and you can break it down even more simply than that, is if you wrote the words or if you designed the cover in the traditional sense, that would be seen as, and then you use say a pro writing aid, for example, to go over your text, or you know, arguably generative film, Photoshop, I think that's arguable, but that might be seen as assisted and not generated. But if you're asking ChatGPT to write you a paragraph, and then that's the basis, that paragraph is then the basis of something that you put in your novel, then that is generated. And if you are generating it, there is a tick box now that you need to tick, and you tick it and say, yes, this AI was involved in this creation. Now, the question, which we don't have an answer to yet, is what happens to things that have been ticked? Again, this might have been teased out a bit by the time this goes live, but as we're recording it, I don't know what consequences that would have. It might be, my guess would be, at some point, a little flag will appear on your sales page saying AI was involved in the creation of this book. So the reader knows. That's possible. I mean, you could also say if the law changes and, you know, copyright law changes on an image, and you've said the image that, you know, something was involved and AI was involved in the creation of the image, then, you know, that would give Amazon a pretty easy way to sweep those up. I also think, and I think this is a pretty good start by Amazon. I think they've done a really good job in kind of working this out, because it's really difficult. They have to cover themselves. And I think this is a good first attempt at doing that. And I think one of the things, they're always fighting to stay ahead of scammers. So it's kind of like, I've discussed this with some fairly senior Amazon people before, and it's kind of like there's a hole in the fence. A rabbit has kind of made a hole in the fence. They patch up that hole, but the rabbit's really clever, and it goes further down the fence, makes another hole. So they have to patch that hole, and they're always patching holes, and the scammers are always finding other ways through the fence. So it's a kind of a continuing battle for Amazon to do this. It wasn't that long ago. Well, Jane Friedman had a problem with some AI assisted generating whatever scammer who used her name on garbage books. And before that, I remember not too long ago, one of the subcategories, a fairly big one, was filled with AI generated books over a weekend. It's usually on a weekend when they know Amazon won't be as quick to take things down, understandably, because they need time off. And I think Amazon are giving themselves an easier way to sweep up that kind of nonsense and get it off the store, which is, let's be honest, that's not just good for readers, that's also good for authors.
Yes, it is. And I completely agree. I think it's a really good start by Amazon. The fundamental principles are sound in that if it's generated by AI, it should be declared. If you're using AI tools to help you in a sort of perfunctory manner, it doesn't have to be declared. But there are, of course, lots of unknown questions as well as answers.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly how it's going to be displayed to readers is an important one. Or are they actually simply going to stop? I mean, it's a very one or zero. Because if you, in the course of writing a 100,000 word novel, have four or five paragraphs in there which are word for word what ChatGPT spat out and you didn't change them, you would have to tick that box and say AI generated. Now, what will Amazon?
That's the next question. Is, I mean, a lot of authors in the AI group I was kind of observing last night said they just wouldn't tick the box. So, you know, they might use AI. I'm definitely not saying you should do that. I think personally, I don't use AI for actual creation. I do the writing myself. I don't have a big problem with people who do use it. I think that's fine. But I think if you don't tick the box, because people say, well,
you're breaching the terms if you don't tick the box.
You are, absolutely. But then how would Amazon know? That's the next question.
Because they use AI checking to detect it.
Yeah, but the problem with that is, at the moment, as we stand, I've looked into that just from seeing some other bits and pieces, and the false positives are through the roof. So it's not reliable yet, apparently. I'm no expert.
False positives, you know, is the other note I've made to mention as being a possible unforeseen consequence of this is the bots interfere. We've all had this. All of us, none of us are immune from the Amazon bot at some point taking down a listing or whatever and saying it's in breach and you have to fight it. And that could go up exponentially now. With this,
but that's assuming that they are going to do something. I mean, they're not saying you can't use AI in your work. You've just got to label it. So, the mixed metaphor I saw that made me smile this morning in the SPF group was someone said it's a bright red line with no teeth. I'm thinking, okay, so yeah. I'm sorry, imagine what a red line with teeth looks like. Right? Yeah, it's so it was a bit of a mixed metaphor, but that's true, you know.
Around the edge, it's always around the borderline that you're going to have issues. And I've got a couple of examples in my head. So if you, from a writing point of view, first of all, if you're struggling with a scene and you ask ChatGPT, you tell it everything about the scene and the backstory, and you ask it to write the scene and it writes the scene, you read through that scene and you think, actually, that's a really good way of doing it, having them come in that order, whatever. And then you write the scene based on that, like having a chat with someone. I don't think you'd have to tick the box on that. You've written not generated. If you copy and paste that scene and then edit it pretty heavily, make changes to almost every sentence, maybe move some sentences and reorder stuff.
Well, that's a grey area. I mean,
that's a borderline, yeah.
Well, it's kind of how much is original, by which I mean human created, and how much of it is generated by the AI. That's, you know, and what's the acceptable threshold? It's very hard. Amazon can't really say it. They can't say you can use 10%. They have to kind of be more, it's either, a few. I think they kind of have to have a very low tolerance level, because otherwise there's no certainty.
But the other thing is on images. And I do think this is probably a bit, on the face of it, could be a bit too strict on images. So I think they're different from words. Getting an AI to write your book for you is a very different thing from replacing your stock image subscription, which can be very expensive, with generating stock images effectively from Midjourney or whatever the AI you use to generate images from. And to have the box tick saying this is an AI, this book contains AI generated stuff, when all you've done is you've got a single image of a helicopter from Midjourney on your cover mixed in with other stuff, seems to me a bit harsh. So I don't know whether they're going to differentiate. Well,
as a plain devil's advocate there, you're approaching that from the perspective of a writer, because, you know, it's easy to feel as a writer that you're being exploited by something that has been trained on other, but, you know, we know it's been trained on stuff that we didn't agree that it could use. We've seen enough of that to know that's true. But if you approach that from the perspective of an artist, it's the same argument. It's like, well, okay, so Midjourney has been trained on, again, we know, we're almost certain it's been trained on stuff that is just scraped. And there's all kinds of interesting arguments about whether it should be able to do that, yes or no.
But that's not what KDP are doing this. They're not doing that because they're going to ban any AI-generated image.
I think they potentially, say there are lots of cases coming up soon. If a court in America, let's say, decides that any image created with Midjourney infringes copyright and we can't use them, Amazon will now have, has a way to immediately identify those and remove them, potentially. So it could be future-proofing for changes in the law. It probably isn't, but, it does give them that opportunity. So it's interesting. I think it's a pretty good first attempt at laying down some guidelines, because it is not easy to pick a way through this.
Okay, so I'm going to go into KDP and see what questions we get asked. I'm in my book Desert Venom now, and there's a new sort of splash page before you get in on KDP. Once you're inside, and I'm just going to go into the content page, the third question down underneath cover is AI-generated content. Amazon's collecting information about the use of artificial intelligence tools in creating content. And then there's a link to the What is AI-generated content page. Did you use AI tools creating text, images, and or translations in your book? So for the purpose of this, I'm not going to click on save. I'm going to click on yes, see what comes up next. Text, and then you get a drop down. Some sections with minimal or no editing. Some sections with extensive editing, entire work with minimal or no editing, entire work with extensive editing, images, one or a few AI-generated images with minimal or no editing, one or a few AI-generated images with extensive editing, many AI-generated images with minimal or no editing, and many AI-generated images with extensive editing. And finally, translations. Some sections with minimal or no, some sections with extensive, entire work, minimal or no editing, entire work with extensive editing. So there are the three areas you're going to get asked. Now, if I say, let's pretend I've used an AI-generated De Havilland Venom on the front. So if I say one or a few AI-generated images with extensive editing, because it's going to likely to be recolored and everything by me, which tools, that then comes up with, which tools did you use to create the AI-generated images in your work? Okay, so I would put in Midjourney. And that looks to be the end of the questions on that front. So if we say to text, some sections with minimal or no editing, again, which tools did you use to create the text in your work? So that will be the next thing. So this is reading and feeling more like a survey than...
Yeah, it does now. Yeah, interesting.
...than anything else. So I'm not going to go back to no and then come out of that without saving. And I'm now slightly paranoid that KDP knows
I've just had a phone call from Amazon. There's an infringement in Huntingdon. Their team has been dispatched.
I can hear the helicopter coming.
Yeah, they're coming down now.
So there is a nuance to the questions they're asking, which does indicate to me that there's going to be a nuanced response to it in the long term. They may not be there yet. This may be phase one of intelligence gathering, information gathering of the extent of the use of AI, the extent of people talking it, being open about it. We should point out, right, scammers, determined scammers, the bad actors you refer to who pick up their work on a Friday night because they know it's less likely to be taken down straight away, they're not going to volunteer any of this information, of course. They're there to scam the system. So it's not so much about them. But it is nonetheless going to impact on us one way or another. We're just not entirely sure to what degree at the moment.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is a very fast changing and, kind of dizzying in some senses area of the creative arts. It's definitely one that is interesting. It took me a while to come towards it. I'm always... I'm not an early adopter. And this
Joe Penn finds it hilarious that you've been cynical about AI for years and then suddenly, along with everybody else.
But the thing is, I'm usually right. Right. So, I mean, Joe, for example, was telling me about German translations about 10 years ago, and I said it's not the right time yet. And she tried and had a really good stab at it, but it didn't take off. But 5 years later, I had a go And it obviously it's worked very well. So Joe is, I think she would admit this, she is usually right at the head of ahead of the curve.
Yes.
But often a little bit too early. But that's why she's great to listen to, because
yes,
she's very well informed about things before they become relevant, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things, reasons I listen.
Anyway, let's talk about how you and I are using AI. Because interestingly, you've gone down the sort of ChatGPT route and I've gone down the image route, which is a good good main two areas for us. So in terms of using ChatGPT and your marketing, that's the first distinction, right, Mark? You don't really use it for, you don't use it for writing, for generating text, although probably
no
ideas and...
I've kind of toyed around with kind of text for, you know, ideas for plots and things. But in the assisting... It could be Amazon distinction, assisting me with kind of sorting things out. But
I actually don't think it's great at that either. I've done that as well. I've never been particularly... I'd rather have a conversation with a mate than ChatGPT. It's always been a little bit cliched. Like, you've watched a few James Bond films in my case, so that you come up with a pretty cliched plot. But anyway, yeah, just sorry to interrupt.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, personally, and this is just me, other people have different opinions and that's totally fine. But for me, I consider myself to be a writer. That's my job. And I quite enjoy, thankfully, the writing process. That's kind of the best thing about being a writer, is being able to sit or stand here at this desk and write 2,000-3,000 words a day. I enjoy writing sentences that I think are really cool. I love doing that. So I wouldn't want to subcontract that part of the process to anybody else. To AI in that way just feels... like it doesn't work for me. I've worked with, so the kids' books, for example, I have Alan, who helps me writing the kids' books. That's different. Those books are more Alan's books than mine. We'll talk about, you know, ideas and plots and things, but Alan and I collaborate on that, but it's a human writing that. But for, you know, the Milton books or the Atticus books, I enjoy writing those. So I'll continue doing that. Other people will use it. You know, they'll use PseudoWrite. I remember I had a chat with, speaking of Nink, last year with Elizabeth Ann West at Nink, who's been was quite fast to use PseudoWrite. And I looked, she gave me a demo. Initially, I said I wasn't interested, so she kept persisting. Eventually, persuaded me, and I looked, and it was like, yeah, that's quite impressive. And I think she uses it in her process totally fine. I think, you know, it's not illegal. It's fine to do that. Just not for me. But anyway, but that's me. But then images, that's more your thing. And, you know, and that is, I'm very impressed with what I'm seeing on images.
Yeah. So I'm, before I talk about images, why don't you tell us how you are using ChatGPT then?
Mm. Okay. Yeah. So I'm running quite a lot of tests on different ads in different places at the moment. So Facebook is kind of, 70% of my marketing at the moment is probably Facebook. And it always varies for me, but that's probably what I'm doing at the moment. And if I'm testing lots of variation to find combinations that work best, you're going to need headlines, primary text, the kind of sales copy. And it is it's good for that. So you can tell it a bit about your book and say you're doing some Facebook ads. And we cover all of this in the course. I'll show you the process I use. And you want to generate some starting points that you can then put into Facebook and then test them that way. It is good at that. So, you could ask for 10 variations on the headline and it will spit out 10 variations. And then you could say, well, I quite like this one. Vary that, please. But I don't want to have more than 50 characters because I want it all to be visible above the fold. So you don't want it to have the dot, dot, dot abbreviation on the headline. You want it all to be there so the reader can see it. And it will do that. And now once in a blue moon, it will give you one that you wouldn't actually touch. It's kind of like, yep, that is perfect. I'll test that. 9 times out of 10, though, you are going to have to do a little bit of massaging of the text yourself, but that's fine. It's given you, so you don't have a blank sheet of paper anymore. You have something. And most writers, you know, blurbs are hard. Taglines are even harder. As you kind of contract the amount of words you've got to do the task that you're trying to achieve, from 100,000 for a novel to 350 words for a blurb and then to maybe 10 words for a tag, that's really hard. And I'm not an expert at that, but that's why it's useful to have help, and it's pretty good at giving you that help.
Yeah, keyword generation as well. So that's something I always hate. I sit there staring at it for ages, and that's something ChatGPT could help
with. And also, I mean, things like comp authors. So when you're actually targeting, you can ask it for, because I write, even with me, I guess, because I've been doing this a long time and there's quite a lot of stuff about me on the internet. It knows a bit about me anyway, but you could say I'm writing novels in the style of Lee Child, David Baldacci, James Patterson, Tom Clancy, whatever. Give me 50 comparable authors and it will do that. And it did it the other day and it was like, yep, all of them are relevant.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to see where it is, who it thinks I am, because I know it knows who you are. Last time I asked ChatGPT who the author James Blatch was, it came up with a load of stuff about me co-writing the L.J. Ross books. It's now saying that James Blatch is primarily known as a podcaster, journalist, and author. He's one of the hosts of the self-publishing show and podcast, a video series offers advice and information for self-publishing authors. Interviews with successful authors, experts. Before Venture the World, James Blatch had a career in broadcasting, including work for the BBC. This is much better. BBC, range of experience in both traditional media landscape and the newer digital platforms has allowed him to provide a well-rounded perspective in the world of publishing and content creation. I mean, honestly, this is a better CV than I could have written for myself. As an author, James has also tried his hand at writing. However, my information may be outdated. So for the most current information, I recommend checking out his latest works. Great. I love that. Okay, so I'm using it for imagery and image generation. So what I traditionally do when I market my books and the books and Fuse books is Stuart Bache generally does the covers. I ask Stuart as part of the package that we pay for, I pay for personally or as part of this Fuse, to get Texas versions of it. So you get a copy of the cover without any title or author name on it. And then you can crop that in maybe a couple of ways, sometimes just one way. And you can use that as the image and it looks great. Those images do look great. And you put that as your Facebook image and then you put your description and headline either side of that. And you can create a Facebook ad using that looks quite impressive. I sometimes put a 3D, what do they call the pack shot of the book in there as well, because occasionally you get comments underneath saying, is this a film? Is it a TV series? Which is a fair enough comment. I use Dynamic Creative a lot, so you don't always know which description the headline's going to go with it. And sometimes it could be ambiguous. So I've taken to using a pack shot as well. That's a very simple thing to do in Photoshop and Canva and other products like that. What AI has done, if I wanted to run like 5 or 6, maybe 10 variations of, let's say, an RAF pilot in the desert in Iraq, I've got to go to Stuart. Stuart then has to go to all the stock, and I'm not good enough in Photoshop to create, to take a stock image of a pilot and then put him in the desert and get all that right. It would look terrible with me doing it. That's a skilled job. You might be better than me, listener. But I would go to Stuart. He would go to Shutterstock or Alamy, whoever the services he uses, try to find a pilot who's roughly 1950s RAF. And that's really, really difficult. I know from experience, I've had to dress up and be photographed in the past because it's so difficult to find exactly the right thing. He would then have to create this, you know, time consuming an afternoon in Photoshop with some desert imagery. Again, it's got to be accurate. It's got to be 1950s. And then in all likelihood, I'm going to get one, maybe two variations of that that may or may not work. And then when I get them, when I'm putting the ad together, putting the pack shot in, I might think, oh, the pack shot, the picture, the book is really close to the pilot. I'd really love the pilot to be on that side and the pack shot to be here and all those things. That's where we are now. It's the world we live in. And the result is I don't go to Stuart every 2 weeks and say, right, I want another 10 variations of this, because it would be time consuming and prohibitively expensive to do that. But AI has enabled me to order up images that are remarkably good, remarkably accurate. So RAF pilots wearing fatigues in the 1950s, standing in the desert, move the pilot over to the left. Now, in correlation with that, there's a new version of Photoshop called Photoshop Beta. So you do have to have a subscription to it, or that's pretty cheap at the moment. You can get it for less than £10 here in the UK a month. And Photoshop Beta has a bit of generative AI filling in it. So that really helps you with the composition of these pictures. And the result is, and Mark's been on the other end of this, he's asked me to generate some images for his John Milton series. And within 5 minutes, he's got 5 or 6 images back, all of which are good. And if he says to me, actually, I want to put some text on it, can you move this guy over to the right? I can do that. Ask Photoshop to fill in the rest so it doesn't look like someone's just pasted something there. And that is, honestly, it's revolutionizing the Facebook ads world for me. And it's something, if you're not doing this, you don't know how to do it, we do have an answer for you, because we have a step-by-step instruction on how to do all this stuff. I will tell you about it in a moment. But there, yeah, it's changing the ads landscape.
Yeah, absolutely. And then interestingly, the actual ads that I've used some of those images, just testing them, and you have too. And we're seeing better performance with those images than the images we were using before, which is interesting.
Which is what it's all about, right? We should say, you know, however pretty your ads look, you do obviously need to be testing and optimizing and checking the bottom line. Pretty images don't always sell books. I've also used it for A+ content. So A+ content on your product page now looks much, much better than it used to using those banners.
You should go and look at James's book, or look at Kerry Donovan, one of our authors.
The Ryan Cain books, yeah.
The Ryan Cain books have that, and it looks really good. I mean, I know Kerry saw that and nearly fell off his chair. He was kind of like, that's amazing.
He's put them up in his office, which is great. So
yeah, they look really great.
And so there's a lot of know-how. Mark and I always dive into these. We're not necessarily the earliest adopters, but as soon as it becomes practical and useful and is going to work, that's when we really get our teeth into it. And we've done that on the text and imagery side between us now. And so, as Mark alluded to at the beginning, we have added a module to Ads for Authors. So it's made Ads for Authors an even more powerful and inviting course to be in. As always, if you're already a student of Ads for Authors, all of this is at no extra cost. We always add stuff and we never charge people twice. And so if you're not in Ads for Authors, now might be the time to buy in and be on this train each time stuff gets added. So we've done a module. I won't go through it laboriously because we've been chatting for 40 odd minutes now. But it's a module that takes you through the copywriting, using ChatGPT imagery, getting started with Midjourney, what it is, how to use it through a discussion. It's not always intuitive on that. How to use the basic Photoshop beta skills, and then the workflow or the ads and A+ content. So by the end of it, you'll be able to do everything I've just described by following these step-by-step instructions, and you will have endless variations of your covers and your characters. There's other social media things you can do, and I've done this. I did this ages ago now, but I could do it again, is to ask AI to imagine my characters, and then you could post them, particularly your readers who've already read your books. They love that. They say, well, that's not what I imagined at all, or that's really good. And again, how else would I have done that? Ask Stuart to trawl around stock images and try and do it. Not practical, but it is practical and happening now with Midjourney. And well, there are many other image generators. I use Midjourney.
Yeah, me too. It's a little bit not the easiest platform to use to start with. It is a bit weird in the way that you do it. We won't go into that now, but once you get get the hang of it, it's pretty simple. So
yeah.
And it's very addictive. It's quite fun.
It is. And at the moment, you need to be mastering this stuff. It's not massively complicated, but it does require a bit of mastering. In a year's time, we'll be teaching something else in this area. That's how quickly this is moving. But I always think when these innovations come along, the vast majority of people don't touch them. Simply, that's just human nature. A percentage of the population do touch them, and you want to be in that, because that gives us, like, I don't know, a year, 18 months or so of being ahead of the game in advertising and our product placement on Amazon and so on. Use this window of opportunity now to get ahead of the game and milk that opportunity. And then who knows, in a year's time, Mark, what we'll be adding to the Ads for Authors course in this particular module in this field will maybe not even easy to predict at the moment.
No, and I did say that I would talk about the actual kind of ads. I'll very, very briefly mention that, because that is probably where we'll add most. So it is possible now to basically not target any ads. So it's kind of let Facebook, maybe you'd filter it by age or gender or location. So you could potentially be sending it to all men over the age of 25 in America. So that's going to be 30 million probably or more. And you're going to let Facebook do that for you. Now, I said that I had caveats for this, and I do. I do go into this in the course, and I'll show you how to do that kind of campaign, and I'll go into the caveats in a bit more detail. But the issue you have with Amazon, selling on Amazon, is you don't have both bits of the equation. So you have Facebook telling you, you're saying to Facebook, I want this to be as efficient as possible, and your objective will probably be clicks. You want your traffic. So it'll say, okay, he wants cheap clicks, but what you really want, you don't really want cheap clicks, you want conversions. And Facebook doesn't know whether someone it sends to Amazon buys on Amazon. Now, you know that. If you use Amazon attribution or an affiliate tracking link, or even if you benchmark, you have a rough idea of whether those clicks are actually doing you any good. Facebook doesn't have that. So what Facebook will do is it's blindfolded. It will try and get you, it will see that you want traffic, and it will try and get you the cheapest traffic it can. So what you might find is, and I've seen this in the testing that I've done, is you could get sub 10 cent clicks. And you know, for $10 or $20, you'll get hundreds of clicks, but not many of them will convert, and Facebook can't optimize on the ones that do convert. So it's an interesting idea, and there is more, I think it's more defensible when it comes to selling off your own store, when you can install the Facebook pixel on a sales cart or a checkout page, and Facebook then would know that someone has converted. It can then optimize for more of those kind of people. But when it can't do that with Amazon. So that's a caveat. Just be careful. It's not, it's tempting to see this kind of suggestion that you can do open targeting. Facebook does all the hard work for you. It is tempting because it feels like it's a shortcut. But I don't think it's a great idea. It's worth testing, and you know, people are seeing some success. But generally speaking, I would be a little bit circumspect about that. So I personally don't think it isn't really there yet.
I'm also testing it, and we'll report back as we go along with that. I mean, I do think there's something here, and I have for some time. I've liked the dynamic creative, and I like the fact that you can seed. There's a box you can tick to expand your audience where Facebook thinks it's relevant. And I've experimented with that and have had some success with that. And I think there's a lot under the bonnet in Facebook that they don't offer us as targeting options anymore, particularly after the Cambridge Analytica episode a few years ago. And so you can access that by ceding some targeting power to Facebook. It's also a quick way to spend your money, so you do have to be careful about it. But with AI coming in, Mark, over the next year or two, this might be an area to expand. Facebook might get better and better at looking at your product, looking at the words you've used, and then finding the audience matching using AI in the future. So this is definitely one to watch, an area to watch.
Yeah, there is some suggestion that it's looking at images and text. I'm not convinced that it is yet. I don't know. I'm just, I don't know. No one really knows. So I'd be completely blown smoke if I said that. He probably has an idea. But yeah, I think anyone in the author community who says they know how it works is probably bullshitting, because I don't believe that to be the case. But, it is people. I've seen some success reported by people trying this. And that's great. Can't really explain why that would be, but if it's working for them, then that's great for them. They should do more of it. And people should test. We should all test, things all the time. And that's important, because, that's how people discover new ways of doing things. If we all followed the things that we've been doing for the last 5 years, nothing changes. So I'm all for testing. Just be careful.
Yeah. Okay, just a reminder that if you do want to have a look at the Ads for Authors course, you can go to selfpublishingformula.com/ads for authors. That AI module is going to be in there. It probably won't be there by the time this podcast goes out. We are literally recording it at the moment, but it will be launched certainly at the end of, I would imagine, the end of the month. But we'll keep you up to date with that. But you'll be in and ready to receive it as soon as it's there. Okay. Gosh, it's been a good one. Well, you and I are still humans at the moment. I am looking forward to being replaced by Max Headroom. Yeah, I look a bit like him. Do you remember Max Headroom?
Yeah, of course I do. But no one in the America, no one, most of our audience will have no idea what you're talking about.
So he played golf, Max Headroom. I remember he loved golf, which is obviously a bit weird. He was a computer. Looked like a computer generated DJ in the 80s. Of course, presumably it was a bloke in a mask. But you have to look at him on YouTube. He'll come back. Yeah. His day has come. There's that moment in the X Machine. He has to cut himself to find out with. And you get so engrossed in this whole AI thing. Is it him or is it the...
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Okay, right. That's it. Thank you very much indeed. Do post your feedback in on the Amazon KDP position they've taken on AI into our group, and we will make sure that KDP here in the UK at least get to hear your views. I'm sure they'll go to the States as well. That's it. Thank you very much indeed. The team behind the scenes who put this podcast together, that's John and Catherine and Tom... and Sarah and Mel. I think I've got everybody. I'm not sure. All that remains for me to say is a goodbye from him.
And a goodbye from me. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Get show notes, the podcast archive, and free resources to boost your writing career at selfpublishingshow.com.
Join our thriving Facebook group at selfpublishingshow.com/Facebook. Support the show at patreon.com/selfpublishingshow. And join us next week for more help and inspiration so that you can make your mark as a successful indie author. Publishing is changing, so get your words into the world and join the revolution with the Self-Publishing Show.